Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Anniston, Alabama today. Today I have a very special show airing on Saturday as opposed to Sunday. I normally am brought to you every Sunday at 4 p.m., but today I'm broadcasting live from my hometown of Anniston, Alabama. I'm here for the holidays, and I'm glad to be with you. I'm also broadcasting live from my website, and that's at TaylorMade101.com. And when you get out there, click on Live Broadcast. Again, that's TaylorMade101.com. When you get out there, click on Live Broadcast. To join the conversation today, contact us at 323-580-5712. Again, once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening or visiting the website, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101 for real-time updates. Again, on December the 5th, I want to remind you on December the 5th at 4 p.m., we will be joined by a special guest and recording artist, Petra Luna. Now, Petra is the artist who can make you laugh, cry, riot, and reflect, but most of all, she can make you think. As a performer, she commands her audiences effortlessly, and the scope of her talent is seemingly endless. Her voice is intoxicating and powerful. She sings in 7 different languages and is an amazing dancer. Join us next Sunday at 4 p.m. during our regular broadcasting show. We're going to be hosting a very special show, and it's going to be in support of Petra Luna's P. Luna Foundation. And you can go out there for more information. Go out to helpforguys.org. That is H-E-L-P, the number 4, guys, plural, .org. Helpforguys.org. So today we have a lot going on. There's a lot happening over the weekend. And I put a lot of the information out there on my blog, and I wanted to spark some conversation around some of the events. We're going to start out by talking about what happened to the president over the weekend. Some of you, or you may not be aware of, that the president was involved in an accident. Now, he was okay, of course, but for the most part, he was playing in a post-Thanksgiving pickup game with visiting family members and a personal aide, Reggie Love, and Obama caught an elbow in the lip. And then the injury was treated by the medical unit located on the first floor of the White House. And the president was given a local anesthetic. Now, the medical staff used a procedure that required more stitches than normal in an effort to minimize the scar. And so it's interesting that that the president was involved in such an incident. And I want to know, I wonder if he's going to stop playing basketball or his aides are going to advise him to stop playing ball. You know, I would love to get your comments on him playing basketball in the White House and to see, you know, what's your opinion about the president getting involved in some physical activities like that? You know, it's one thing to go out and, you know, to lift weights or to run. You know, run miles or, you know, to swim, you know, individual sports. But, you know, basketball is a full contact sport. And him being a competitor along with anybody else playing the game, you know, sometimes you get roughed up. You know, you may sprain an ankle, you may get elbowed in a lip, or you may get knocked out in some cases. You may, you know, eventually end up on your back. I mean, there are many different accidents or incidents that happen on the basketball court. They may end up injuring anyone who plays the game, not just the president. But so I would love to get your opinion about that. Again, President Obama he received some medical attention. And if you didn't, if you're just not joining us, he was planning a post-Thanksgiving pickup game and was visiting family members and personal aide Reggie Love. And he caught an elbow in the lip, and the injury was treated by the medical unit located on the first floor of the White House. And He was given a local anesthetic to the area, and the medical staff used a procedure that required more stitches. Now, they wanted to reduce the amount of scarring that these type of injuries cause. So they did a procedure that was kind of a, you know, required more stitches than normal in that area. So I'm assuming it was probably, you know, he ended up biting his lip or he got an elbow or something like that. But it didn't seem to be all that serious. But it was just, now I'd like to get your comments, though. What do you think? Should the president be out there, you know, playing ball like that? I mean, he wants to keep his exercise. But normally you see more people, you know, playing golf, swimming, you know, running or jogging, if you will. Perhaps, you know, maybe doing some weight training, but more or less individualized sports activities. You know, I remember, you know, George Bush, you know, out there on the golf course, and every now and then he would be out there, you know, chopping wood and things of that nature. But it's interesting to see the president get out there and get physical. I guess it shows his toughness, you know. You know, he can balance his activities, you know, do more than one or two things at a time. So, you know, I don't have any opposition towards it. What about you? Do you think the president should be playing basketball? The leader of the free world should be out there getting injured on the basketball court. So to join the conversation, remember to contact us at 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those that are you that are listening or visiting the website, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101 for real-time updates. And I'm also broadcasting live via my website, and that's TaylorMade101.com, TaylorMade101.com, and click on live broadcast. Okay, some other things that are happening in the news that I'm also out there blogging about is Fantasia. Now, Fantasia admits in court she was aborted her married lover's child. Now, I'm going to be talking about that later on in the show. But there was a report out on RadioOnline.com. They obtained an exclusive audio recording of Fantasia Barrino, you know, the singer, the American Idol winner, testifying in court that she aborted the child of her married lover, Antoine Cook. Now, he's no relationship to me, just for the record. And this happened around the time that her failed suicide attempt this past August. So I will be talking a little bit more about that, and I'll be taking your calls on that. But first, I want to get to the main component of the show today. Now, I was watching Keith Olbermann a couple of days ago, and I was really, really intrigued by Wendell Porter and Michael Moore's interview. They had a sort of like a dialogue during the Keith Olbermann show. And Wendell Porter, he admitted that his PR company, Cigna, that he was a vice president of, they did a coordinated blitz, if you will, to smear Michael Moore, or more or less to discredit him from the movie Sicko. Now, I don't know if you've seen Sicko, but it was a pretty good documentary. I really enjoyed the actual documentary. Just like I did at Fahrenheit 9/11, it really showed a different side of the president's inauguration that was never aired before. And so Sicko, in a like manner, was able to really get into the healthcare system in ways like I've never seen before. So I was really, really interested to see what the dialogue between Wendell Porter and Michael Moore on the Keith Olbermann show. And so, a surprise to no one who cringed through some of the nasty and personal smears against Michael Moore, as Sicko was released, reformed healthcare executive Wendell Porter admitted that there was a systematic plan and campaign to discredit both the filmmaker and documentary. Now, he was on Democracy Now! Right before the Keith Olbermann show. And it was hosted by Amy Goodman at the time, one of the nation's one of the TV and radio shows, Democracy Now!, hosted by Amy Goodman, the former vice president of Cigna and one of the nation's largest healthcare companies, revealed that Cigna met with the other big health insurers to hatch a plan to push yours truly off a cliff. That's Michael Moore. Now, you know, for many years, you hear people say, about conspiracy theories. You hear a lot of people talk about, things that the government may be doing or big corporations may be doing. But this was a telltale sign of what was really happening behind the scenes. Now, I was kind of surprised that Wendell Carter came out and really revealed this information. I mean, he's come out. Of course, he has this book out now called Deadly Spin. Wendell Carter, he's the author of the new book, Deadly Spin. And he really revealed just how frightening the healthcare industry was that sicko might ignite a public wave of support for socialized medicine, as they called it. Now, on the Keith Olbermann Show, Carter had a candid conversation with Michael Moore about the large health insurance companies, how they came together to over a common cause. That was to stop American people from going to see the movie. Now, of course, you can go out there on YouTube and you can search for Olbermann, Wendell Carter, and Michael Moore, and you can see a couple of different videos out there that it talked about. I'm going to play a snippet of the conversation, and this is really, really important to listen to the conversation here. So take a listen.
In his book, Deadly Spin, former health insurance executive Wendell Carter describes his industry's efforts to delegitimize Michael Moore's 2007 documentary, Sicko. According to Mr. Carter, the industry at large had a plan to figuratively, quote, push Moore off the cliff. In our third story tonight, my guests, Wendell Carter and Michael Moore, will discuss cliffs and pushes for the first time. Of course, the premise of Sicko was to highlight the fundamental flaws in this nation's for-profit healthcare system, as well as the benefits of universal healthcare, at a time when no one in this country was even really talking about either. According to Carter, insurers feared the movie could crater their industry. So to subvert the movie, Carter says American health insurance plans, AHIP, funded a campaign to smear Sicko. The principals, a public relations firm, APCO, which in turn created a front group called Health America, and some media outlets took the bait. June 2007, USA Today prints an op-ed critical of Sicko's premise. The author, Sarah Burke, was identified as executive director of Healthcare America, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. No acknowledgement that Burke was essentially on the payroll of the health insurance industry. The same Sarah Burke showed up in that infamous CNN Sanjay Gupta report on Sicko. Burke, never identified in the piece, told CNN's audience that Michael Moore, quote, played fast and loose with the facts. An ironic quote in retrospect. Joining me now, as promised, Academy Award-winning filmmaker Michael Moore and the former head of corporate communications at Cigna, now senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy, author of the new book Deadly Spin, Wendell Carter. Gentlemen.
Now, so that was Keith Olbermann's introduction to what happened. He gave a little background of what happened, how people really got on the bandwagon of this PR campaign against Michael Moore. And so what you're about to hear now is the conversation that took place between Michael Moore and Wendell Carter. Wendell Carter goes into this explanation of what happened and how people were, in fact, trying to discredit Michael Moore and how they went about it. I mean, the research that went into it, the movies that they went and watched of Michael Moore. They took notes on him and his family. And Michael Moore had, this is his first opportunity to really talk to Wendell Carter since he came out and to give him a little bit of insight of what happened. So I want you to take a few minutes to just listen to the conversation that took place between Wendell Carter and Michael Moore.
Good evening. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Keith. Hey, Michael.
Good evening, Keith.
Wendell, on your blog today, you apologized to Michael Moore. Is there anything you'd like to say to him more or less in person here?
Well, I'm sorry for the part that I played in attacking the movie. I did see the movie actually twice before it was screened across the country, once in Sacramento when you had the initial screening and the official premiere in your hometown, Bel Air. When I saw the movie the first time, that you had really gotten a lot of it right. And I was really not very happy at all to have to be a part of the effort to discredit the movie, but I was still working for the industry then, so my apologies.
Well, first of all, Wendell, thank you for saying that, and certainly the apology is accepted. And in fact, I think of you as a real hero. You've done something very brave and courageous, giving up a very good job and knowing that you would not earn that income again and probably be vilified by this industry, and to come forward. I mean, I've been making these movies for over 20 years, and I've never had a top executive come forward and admit what you've admitted. And yet I've been dealing with this with every movie since Roger and Me. When I remember, I was on The Tonight Show. It's my first time ever on national TV. And 20 minutes before the show, they're telling me that some executive from General Motors is there with a packet of information about Michael Moore and trying to smear me to the people, the producers of the Tonight Show. And it was that same line that the Healthcare America, the fake organization that CNN used and USA Today used and so many other media outlets used when Sickle came out, mm-hmm. saying he plays fast and loose with the truth. And I've listened to that for 20 years, and it's always a lie because all the facts in my film are always true. And I'm very, very careful with this. I take it so seriously. And because I want to win the political argument that I'm trying to make. So the very first and foremost thing is that things have to be correct. And so when you were working at Cigna and your insurance, all the insurance executives, apparently I read your book this weekend, all got together and met a number of times. We came to this small village in Michigan where I was living. And I didn't realize it until I read your blog this morning actually you had we'd met before.
That's right.
And that you were there, as you said in the blog this morning, to spy on me and to do reconnaissance and on the film. And it was I had to go through a lot of this stuff for so long, and if you don't mind, Keith, could I ask Wendell a question?
Go ahead, please.
I mean, this is the first time we've talked, so maybe we can talk later.
I hope so.
But I just, you mentioned that your son, you took your son to the screening right. when you came to the little town that I'm in Michigan. And I'm just wondering, you said that you sat next to him during these 2 hours. He's watching on the screen what you do for a living, which is, as you say in your book, contributing to the deaths of 45,000 Americans every single year because of this for-profit health insurance system we have. It causes that many deaths every year. And you say in the book that you're part of that. And I'm just wondering, as you were sitting there next to your son, being a dad myself, and after the movie, he wants to come up and have his picture taken with me. And you say this morning in your blog that he's telling you that I'm his hero. And yet he's watching what you do for a living. At that time, I'm just curious what that must have done to you or how you felt going through that experience.
He knew that I was having problems with the job that I was having to do and that I was having misgivings about what I was supposed to be doing as a spokesman for the industry. You depicted in the movie, a lot of the people in this country have insurance, but it's very, very inadequate. And people are finding every day that the insurance that they think they have is going to be there for them really isn't. He saw me be very affected by that movie. It's hard to watch that movie and not almost tear up many times during the movie. And he and I talked, and I told him that I was thinking of leaving my job. I didn't know how I could do it. But I felt like I should do something other than what I was doing. I just didn't feel very good about having to do what I had done to spy on your movies, to go to the back of the theater and take notes as I was watching it, and then come back and know that I was going to have to be on the front line of the calls from the media when it did start showing nationwide and people would be calling me about the people who were Cigna members in the movie. That was going to be tough, and I knew it was going to be tough.
Now, so this conversation takes place, again, Michael Moore just had this first opportunity to talk to Wendell Potter after, you know, many, many, many years and moons and Sundays ago that, you know, they really had a real campaign against to really discredit Michael Moore and the movie, so they could put as much against the healthcare, you know, the efforts, so that the healthcare bill would get. Okay, of course, ultimately President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, all of them were able to get the healthcare bill passed. But all of that noise that was in between the time that, you know, the president introduced the bill, and even before then, you know, it was back when President Clinton tried to get the healthcare bill passed. They really went after Hillary Clinton at the time. I think she was really one of the big advocates of it. And of course, they muzzled her, and then you know, and then it kind of went away. And then, of course, President Obama, he elevated the conversation, and he took a different strategy, different approach. But again, it took literally a year of his presidency to try to get that health care bill passed, and all of the money that was going in to trying to defeat that bill. And it's just interesting to see how these corporate institutions work to reshape the conversation, or to move the country in a direction that's really favorable to profits, as opposed to being there for the American people. So I thought that was a really good interview, if you will, that Keith Overman, actually a good segment that Keith Overman did to allow Michael Moore to have a candid conversation with Wendell Potter about the events that took place during the time of Sicko, when the movie came out, even before that, because all the research that went into everything else he did. And for him to come out now, of course, in you know, in his new book, to talk about, you know, all of the things that took place that really tried to shoot the healthcare bill, even the attacks on Michael Moore himself as the voice of the people at that time, how he tried to get in and discredit. I mean, there are countless situations where you have, you know, big institutions try to reshape the conversation such that it would benefit them and ultimately benefit their profit, their bottom line. So we have a few more minutes of the conversation here. I'm going to let you take a listen to the rest of the conversation, and then I'll take your questions and comments.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah. No, I was just at the time when you saw CNN falling, taking the bait, and USA Today and Time Magazine and, you know, much of the media using the actual language that you and your guys developed,
right,
on referring to me as against American principles, socialists, all this stuff. And, of course, Fox News then taking it and, you know, running with it. I mean, that must feel like it must be a real victory when you're in those meetings, having a sense that when you can actually get our major media organizations that supposedly have responsible journalists to just repeat verbatim your talking points.
Oh, it was just amazing. We had a clipping service. I mean, every day we would get articles that would appear that had our talking points in them. And this, by the way, is a 23-page PR plan that was developed and carried out against the movie. I was at the meeting when it was explained, and I'm not supposed to have this. This was something that was actually obtained by Bill Moyers when he did an interview with me last year.
Can I just read a line? Actually, I pulled up Bill Moyers' thing. There's a line in that plan that you guys put together where you said, I'm quoting, the worst case scenario would be that Sicko would evolve into a sustained populist movement.
Right.
That was your worst fear, right, that this movie could make that happen.
That's exactly right. And the industry monitored public opinion from that moment prior to the premiere of the movie, or the national release of the movie, until, you know, many weeks after the premiere, just to see how public opinion had changed, and also monitored the box office receipts of the movie and all these clips that we got. Many of them were placed by Healthcare America, which, as we've talked before, is a front group, and very successful one at that.
Michael, hold on a second.
If there was a populist movement.
So, again, you see that they were able to shape public opinion by framing the conversation in such a way, and then to get these news organizations to repeat it over and over and over. And then they would take those clippings and then, reuse them, if you will, as if it was quoted, the original quote was by that media institution. So it was a really powerful campaign. It was successful to the point that even though the healthcare bill was passed, you still don't have a blanket healthcare policy where, you would have something like a single-payer system. Not to say I'm an advocate for it, but that was one of the options. You don't have the system where you have the public option. None of those opportunities are available now because of this media campaign. I mean, therefore, one could argue that there was some success to this PR campaign against Michael Moore because it did take him a year. It was a lot of fighting, and then now, and a lot of people really don't understand what's really in the healthcare bill. As you know, I talk about it on my show because I think it is one of the most important components to our society to have a healthy healthy nation. And so it was one of the biggest issues that I really advocate for is really a healthcare policy that's affordable for everyone. So I talked about what was in the healthcare plan, and I broke it down into as much detail as I could on my show. So you can just go look it back in the archives and look at and pull that up, if you will. But again, this was a shocking revelation. The former chief spokesman of Cigna, Wendell Potter, revealed just how frightening the health industry was that Sicko, this is the movie by Michael Moore, might ignite a public wave of support for socialized medicine. And socialized medicine, of course, is something that many people try to shape the organ, shape the actual conversation in. I remember clips of Ronald Reagan, changing, doing something similar when he talked about, socialized medicine. It was a very powerful campaign when he came out to talk about socialized medicine. And so on Keith Olbermann's show, this is a clip from MSNBC that was done on the Keith Olbermann show. You should go out to YouTube. It's out there free of charge, of course. You can just go out there and download it and look at it. There's two parts to it. And Potter had a candid conversation with Michael Moore about how the large health insurance companies came together over a common cause, and that was to stop the American people from going to see Sicko. And, I asked around today how many people have seen it. And, of course, there's a lot of people that were unaware of the movie, unaware of what. Again, it was a very successful campaign. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about Wendell Potter coming out now? Of course, people can say you coming out because of your book. Now, why now? You was in it for a extended period of time. Now, why now do you want to come out and talk about that this was a bad thing? Why are you jumping ship and coming onto the side of the American people now? What changed your mind? Are you just trying to sell books or? Have you really had a change of heart? So, of course, those are some of the questions. So what are your thoughts? And so to join the conversation, to talk a little bit about this, just contact us at 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening or visiting the website, leave your comments. When you leave your comments, it elevates the conversation. It allows me to know what interests you. It allows me to respond, to go back and get you more in-depth information that you need to make, of course, make a really good informed decision. Also, click the follow button. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at TaylorMade101 for real-time updates, and I'll be reading your tweets as well. And today I'm broadcasting live via my website, and that's TaylorMade101. That's TaylorMade101.com. And when you get out there, click on live broadcast. Okay, another news. I did mention that about Fantasia. Now, for those of you that didn't know, if you haven't heard yet, RadarOnline.com has obtained an exclusive audio recording of Fantasia, the one from American Idol, testifying in court that she had an abortion with the married man, from a married man over his name was Antoine Cook. Now he's not related to me in any way. Around the first the time that she had that failed suicide attempt in August. Now you can get the full story on RadarOnline.com. I would encourage you to go out there and listen to the transcript as well as look at the transcript and listen to the audio of what happened. It was during a court. It was during when she was in court and for Cook's divorce proceeding with his ex-wife Paula. So I'm going to read to you some of the transcripts. I'm going to read you the transcript of this, of the actual the court case. Now, again, this is on RadarOnline.com. RadarOnline.com. RADAR Online. ONLINE.com. Okay, and so it says that RadarOnline.com has obtained an exclusive video, audio really, recording of Fantasia testifying in court that she aborted the child of her married lover, Antoine Cook, around the time of her failed suicide attempt this past August. They broke the world exclusive story that Fantasia is made the sensational confession in a North Carolina court on Monday during Antoine's divorce proceeding with his ex-wife. They have the video, the audio out there at RadarOnline.com, R-A-D-A-R Online.com. And here's the transcript. I want to read to you the transcript. Now, here are the key parts, and this is from RadarOnline.com, of the court proceedings Monday that included Fantasia admitting to the abortion. Here's the lawyer. See if you recognize this as being a letter you wrote to Mr. Cook on May 10th, 2010. And then Fantasia reads the letter to the court. I want you, this is what she says. I pray every night that I can be in your life forever. Be your friend, lover, prayer partner, wife, and mother of your children. As long as I can have you, I will be the happiest girl in the world. And the lawyer responds, Ms. Barino, when you wrote this letter, you said you wanted to be the mother of his children. Is this right? Then Fantasia responds with, uh-huh. Then the lawyer comes back and says, were you pregnant with his child when you wrote this letter? Then Fantasia says, no, no. And the lawyer says, is it true that at one point you told him you had an abortion? And then Fantasia's lawyer says, objection. So they argue for a few minutes. And then the lawyer comes back, and I guess he's able to continue with his line of questioning because he comes back and says, Ms. Barino, isn't it true that you told Mr. Cook that you had aborted his child? And then Fantasia responds with, when I wrote this letter, I was speaking in future references, like one day I would love to be all of these things that I wrote. I was not pregnant with his child. And then the lawyer says, but did you tell Mr. Cook you aborted his child? And then Fantasia said, I did, yeah. Then the lawyer says, when did you tell Mr. Cook you had aborted his child? Then Fantasia says, I'm not sure. The lawyer continues the questioning by saying, when did you abort his child? And then Fantasia responds with, it hasn't been too long ago. Again, let me repeat that. The lawyer says, when did you abort his child? Then Fantasia responds with, it hasn't been too long ago. Then the lawyer goes on to say, what? Fantasia responds with, I'm not sure. Then Laurie says, I'm sorry, as if he didn't understand. And then Fantasia responds with, I'm not sure, probably when all this other stuff was happening. Then the Laurie says, is it your testimony that this summer? And Fantasia says, I'm not really sure. Then the Laurie comes back and says, how close in proximity was it to Mr. Cook leaving in June 2010? And then Fantasia says, it was right after he left his home. Then the Laurie says, Mrs. Cook contends that she separated from Mr. Cook in June 16, 2010. How close in proximity to her date of separation did you contend that you aborted his child? Fantasia says, I'm not sure. Probably August, when the other stuff happened. So implied in this is that when all of this stuff happened to Fantasia, that it was around the time that she allegedly had an abortion with Cook's child, with Antoine Cook's child. And then, of course, this is a sad set of events. Now, you know, by no stretch of the imagination that I'm actually condoning her behavior, but it's sad for a person of her caliber that, and she's a very religious young lady too as well, for her to have to subject herself to this type of behavior. You know, I'm going to be in prayer for her and her family and everything along those lines, but I was just really disappointed to hear that this had took place. So when I actually discovered this particular article, you know, it was, I was in shock. You know, I mean, this great, you know, relatively successful woman was going through these type of activities or events. I was really, really just in awe when I actually heard it. So, again, you know, all of this stuff out here is, it is on my blog out there. You can go out there and check it out. You can read the actual, you know, that you can hear the audio on radaronline.com. It is very compelling. The full story is out there. You know, of course, the jury is still out on, you know, how much of this, you know, actually took place. But it is, you know, if it is true, it is really kind of disappointing, if you will. So if you want to talk about this and other one of Pato story, you know, feel free to contact me at 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, if you're listening via the website, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And I'll be reading your tweets as well. I have my little BlackBerry here where I try to keep up with everything that's going on. I'm also out there on Facebook reading out there the posts as they come out on Facebook. But nevertheless, give me a call if you have a comment or two about any of the developing activities or some of the news that happened this week. And also, I don't know if you remember Velma Hart. Now, Velma Hart was the lady who burst out on the media scene after telling the president that she was scared about her financial future. This was an African-American vice president of an institution, and she was one of the people in one of the president's town hall meetings that really got onto the president. I mean, she was really, really, you know, scorning him, if you will. And so, if you haven't heard, Hart was let go. She was laid off as the chief financial officer for AmVets. It's a nonprofit organization for Maryland-based veteran services. Now, this was a story that that came out not too long ago, and you can go out there and read it on the Washington Post. It was an article written by Michelle Singletary, which is a pretty good writer, but Velma Hart, who burst out into the media scene after telling the president she was scared about her financial future, has been laid off. Hart was let go as the chief financial officer of a nonprofit Maryland-based veteran services. Now, Hart has become another casualty of this tough economy in which so many people have lost their jobs. It's not anything that she did, said the National Executive Director of AM Vets. She got bit by the same snake that has bit a lot of other people. It was a move to cut our bottom line. Most nonprofits are seeing their money pinched. Jim King would not say whether the organization had any other layoff, but Velma was a good employer, he contends. He said it was just a matter of looking at the bottom line and where could we make the best cuts and survive. Now, King hadn't seen the irony in Hart being fired just 2 months after she emotionally told Obama about her fears for her own financial well-being during a town hall meeting in Washington. I hadn't thought about this in connection to the town hall meeting. She was at the town hall as a private citizen. Whether she had to say what she had to say or own thoughts, he said. Now, Hart's comments that Obama became political fodder as proof that the president was losing his diehard supporters, African-American voters. Now, Hart told me at the time that she still supported Obama, but that she had expected more changes by now. This is an article in the Washington Post by Michelle Singletary, posted on November 22nd. So I would encourage you to go out there and look at the full article. It was ironic that she was scorning the president, and now she's, as they say in this particular article, she's been bit by the same snake. Now, which begs the question, right now, or how do you feel about your financial future? You know, there is an outlook about the about what's going on with the economy, and so it really begs the question, are our jobs safe? In fact, the Fed lowers the outlook for the economy through 2011. Now, the Federal Reserve officials have become more pessimistic in their economic outlook through next year and have lowered their forecast for growth. Now, the economy will grow only 2.4% as opposed to 2.5% this year. So do you feel as your job is in jeopardy? I blogged about this not too long ago about the fact that we've lost so many jobs over the past, 3 to 4 years. And, one would think that, there is an economic engine to inject those jobs back into our society. But the truth of the matter is that those jobs that were lost are not going to be the jobs that are coming back. So we're going to have to find a way to be more creative, more innovative, to look at different sources of generating income as opposed to what we were doing in the past. So although, there's a lot of talk about the jobs being lost, there's a lot of talk about how, all these millions and millions of jobs are going away and how we're going to create these new jobs. But two things that I think we all should be looking at is, the first thing is that the same jobs that are lost, that were lost, are not going to be the same jobs that were going to be coming back. And the second thing we have to look at is the fact that this new economy is really more knowledge-based. So if this new economy is more knowledge-based, that means we need to really reshape how we're going to be generating these new jobs. I mean, there is a case in which, we're going to try to rebuild our infrastructure. But even if we try to rebuild our infrastructure, the type of jobs are not going to replace the ones that were lost, not in its entirety. That may fill a percentage of the gap. But there's still a large portion that we still have to, we have to fill. There's a large gap that we have to fill. So what are we going to do to fill that gap? And so there are a lot of great opportunities that I'm exploring right now, especially with respect to internet marketing, to online, generating online income, either through, you know, selling a product online or through blogging, through their internet marketing, or through other vehicles that uses knowledge or use creativity or sell products to an international audience, as opposed to just looking at your local component, your local demographics. So if you try this on for size, let's say, for example, you were selling a product in a particular city, and you really don't have an internet-based presence out on the web. So you're really constrained or confined to your local demographics. But in the event that you get on the web and you start producing products, you have a logistics set up so you can, you know, you can take these orders and then ship those orders out to anybody all over the world. Then it increases your opportunities to generate more revenue. And so there are many other examples out there that will be able to, that you will be able to use to generate more income during these tough economic times that were not available or not so prevalent over the last few years. So those jobs are gone. We have to really recognize or face the fact that those jobs that were here, you know, a large portion of them will not, they're gone forever. So we have to really look at what are the alternatives to creating wealth, generating wealth, or generating some financial stability that's outside of, you know, our normal activity with respect to working. And again, this article talks about, it was in Washington APR, Associated Press, talks about how the federal officials project that unemployment won't change much this year, averaging between 9.5% and 9.7%. Now, the current unemployment rate is 9.6. Now, progress in reducing unemployment has been disappointingly slow. The central bank said, according to the minutes of its November 2nd and 3rd meeting. The darker view helps explain why the Fed decided at its meeting earlier this month to launch another round of stimulus. The central bank plans to buy $600 billion in treasury bonds over the next 8 months in an effort to lower interest rates and spur more spending. So the Fed is slightly more optimistic about 2012. Now, that's a whole year away. Again, the Fed is slightly more optimistic about 2012, in part because officials expect the bond buying program to have a positive impact. The economy should grow 3.6% to 4.5% that year, a tick better than June's forecast of 3.5 to 4.5. The economy will also grow 3.5% to 4.6% in 2013. Now, this is what the central bank said, the first time it has issued projections for that year. The economic outlook was prepared at the Fed's meeting earlier this month and released Tuesday. It reflects the view of the Fed's board of governors, regional bank president. The jobless rate will be 8.9% to 9.1% in 2011. Let me say that one more time. The jobless rate will be 8.9% to 9.1% in 2011, Fed officials predict. That's much worse than June's projections of 8.3% to 8.7%. So that's a 0.6% shift in the predictions of the unemployment rate. So which means that, again, we really have to rethink how, you know, even though she was laid off, you know, and I wish her the best. I'm sure everyone out there wish her the best. But, you know, this is not something new. I mean, more and more people are in this situation. So we really, you know, Velma, you know, she's just another victim, you know, of this economic downturn. And I know we were supposed to be in a situation where things should be getting better. I know We were expecting the president to come in and, you know, wave his magic wand, and all of a sudden, you know, we would have, you know, millions of jobs created every week, and, you know, the economy would be booming. But we were in a really, really, really bad situation. You know, it was a lot worse than people were really trying to let on. And so now we're starting to feel that. Velma Hart, you know, now she feels it. You know, just like the average person is really feeling this economic downturn. And so it seems like it's not over. You know, based on this article, you know, from the Associated Press, that it seems like even another year we will be in a similar situation. So we must begin to look at what are other ways that we could, you know, generate income, you know, outside of our traditional ways. And that's why I'm really a big advocate for doing this online marketing, right? To have an online presence. That's the reason why this radio show is so near and dear to my heart. It's because I want to be able to provide a service to the people, and in turn, be able to be able to generate income as an alternative source of my regular, you know, software engineering position. You know, I'm a software engineering manager. I'm a scrum master. I have these certifications. You know, all of these things I'm involved in. But, you know, me, I don't want to be in a position like Velma Hart is, when all of a sudden, you know, the corporate institution says, hey, you know, because of our bottom line, we have to let you go. So what are you doing? That's what I'm posing the question to you. What are you doing now in preparation for, you know, anything that may be coming along in your life? Are you preparing, you know, and I want to be talking about this in 2011. You know, my focus for 2011 would be health, wealth, and certifications, right? You know, I want to make sure that, you know, people that are engaged and involved in the show are looking at, you know, how are they going to be cutting their spending? You know, how are you going to be, you know, list your bills out and say, okay, I want to start with, you know, the lowest paying, the lowest balance, and I'm going to start working towards knocking that particular one out first. And then once I do that, I'm going to move to the next one. You know, make 2011 the year that you concentrate on your financial health, also your health within your body. You know, and also when I talk about the component of certification, you know, get out there, because knowledge is power, right? Knowledge is the new economic engine. You know, so get out there and get certified in something. You know, whether it be, you know, some Microsoft Word, you know, some other type of certification out there. Get a certification so you can be able to provide value in your life and to someone else that's going to be paying for a service. So again, the 2011 theme for current events will be health, your physical health, I mean, eating habits, you know, exercising, things of that nature. Wealth, looking at your financial future, you know, looking at things that are going to empower you to make good decisions. Because truth be told, if you had, you know, you were debt free with respect to, you know, if you had a mortgage, you know, or you had, you know, a car payment, but you didn't have a lot of debt, then even though these companies made these decisions about your life and your livelihood, you wouldn't be affected by it that much. I mean, of course, you know, anytime you lose a job and lose income, you're always affected by it. But if you had less debt, or if you had, you were in a position where you had enough income that's going to stretch you out over an extended period of time, then these concerns won't be so dire in your life if they happen. And it'll allow you to put yourself in a position to do something. You know, I talked about internet marketing. I talk about, you know, creating an online service that you can provide service to people. If you can build that now, before you put in a situation where you had to, you were laid off or put in a position where you were no longer working or employed for a company, then you would be prepared for that particular situation. So again, I wish Velma Hart the best of luck. You know, it could happen to me. You know, she's been doing, you know, she was the vice president she was the chief financial officer of AmVest, nonprofit. So she had to be making a pretty good income, and to have that income cut, you know, I mean, I'm not sure what that was, but to have that income cut, it had to put her in a difficult situation. You know, and so anytime you're cutting an income out like that, it has to have some effect. And so that is the reason why I'm going to be talking about health, wealth, and certification when it comes to the 2011 year. I hope you will join me in listing out your debt, and I hope you will join me in knocking out those bills. I'll be doing a report every month of what I'm doing. I'm going to list them all out. I'm going to start knocking them out, you know, one by one. You know, I want to put myself in a position where I can begin to, you know, at the end of the year, if the economy does turn around, that I'll be in a position to really take advantage of that. Because, you know, who knows? If we're talking about the unemployment rate increasing, you know, over the next year, then who knows if I'm in that gap or not. So I'll be making preparation, you know, for something to happen, even if it doesn't. You know, I was having a conversation, you know, with my parents over the holidays, talking about the fact that, you know, here I am. You know, I was a 2010 the Black Engineer of the Year. Now I've received several achievement awards, you know, over the last few years. I've been promoted several times within the last 3 or 4 years. And so so my performance has been stellar. However, when it comes to an organization making a decision about the health of their company, they have to make the best decision for the company. So I'm not going to ever be have the mind that says, hey, I'm too good to be let go, because I don't know. I need to be preparing all the time to make sure that I'm the best that I can be. And then if something does happen, I need to be in a position so I can move out smartly. So, you know, Lord knows I hope that never happens. And, you know, we'll be talking about this, you know, in years to come. But I don't want to be waiting or put myself in a position not to be ready for it if it does happen. So, you know, by all means, again, we're going to be talking about health, wealth, and certifications. Whatever those certifications are in your particular industry, go out there and start getting prepared for them, because it's going to be the things that's going to sustain you when it comes to long-term, you know, economic health and wealth. So by all means. So I've really enjoyed this special segment that I had today. You know, we talked a little bit about the president and the fact that he, you know, he received some medical attention over the weekend. It was a very, very eventful weekend, if you will, Thanksgiving weekend. And so he was, you know, playing, you know, basketball and got kind of nicked up in his mouth and had some stitches. So he seems to be doing okay now. And I talked a little bit about Fantasia, of course. You know, I would encourage you to go out to radaronline.com to read the transcript. It is eye-opening, you know, to say the least. It is really eye-opening. And, of course, the Wendell Potter situation and the conversation that Keith Olbermann allowed to take place on his show on MSNBC was really eye-opening. And I would have to give Keith Olbermann a big thumbs up for his handling of that whole conversation, because he could, of course, you know, stopped it, cut it off, went on with his show. But he allowed Michael Moore to really ask some good questions. He allowed Wendell Potter to respond appropriately. I mean, so that conversation take place. You know, my hat's off to Keith Olbermann for allowing it to happen. He really showed me that, you know, how you put yourself in a position to really facilitate a good conversation along those lines. So, and then finally, I talked a little bit about Velma and Mrs. Hart, her situation, and it ultimately moved me in a position to talk about the financial situation over the next year. It's gonna be tough. I mean, I know we had a big change in the administration, but that doesn't mean that things are going to be getting better right away. So don't look for 2011 to all of a sudden start looking really good, because it's not. We still have a long way to go before we get to a point where we're really, really, really comfortable. So I really appreciate all the listeners out there for tuning in. So don't forget to bookmark this site. Go out there and bookmark the blog. But until next time, remember it is written to stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook.